and welcome back to the Ice World podcast. We are back with a bonus episode about adapting to the other world after having returned from such an epic Antarctic experience. We will be asking if it is possible to return back to normal life. This podcast will hopefully touch the hearts of previously deployed staff, their families and loved ones, and will also provide an insight to those wondering how people that we've heard about in earlier episodes come back down to earth after their vivid experience in Antarctica. Athletes speak of the post-Olympic blues, adventurers have what is referred to as post-expedition come down, and the military have a really structured process following their deployment. After such a period of high intensity in Antarctica, how do you come back down to earth? I am joined with three Antarctic legends, spreading their talent between Rothera Station and the islands. Today, we are joined by Rothera Station doctor, Bhav Sassi, zoologist and station leader, Jerry Gillam, and station support assistant and founder of the Antarctic Postal Logistics, Kirsten Shaw, also known as Kay. So we'll start with Jerry. Jerry, could you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having us on. I started with Bass as a zoologist back in 2012, working with the penguins and petrels primarily. That was down on Bird Island. I did that for 2.5 years. And then since then, I've been station leader there and on the other island stations, King Edward Point and Cygni. And that's been my life since then, really. This is the first year I'm not heading south.
Wow. How many seasons does that mean that you've done then?
I think it's 10 summers and 6 winters.
That's so impressive. So impressive. And it's such a great experience. I think that is the best part of life, actually. Bhav, can we hear your story, please? What stage of your career were you at when you left for Antarctica?
Yes, my name's Bhav. I'm a doctor. I was working as an A&E doctor before going down south, but I've always been someone that's found different environments really interesting. And I've worked in rural Nepal, Belize, and did a few expedition type jobs before starting with the Antarctic Survey. I was lucky enough to spend a summer, a winter, and then part of another summer at the Rothera Station before moving and spending another few months at King Edward Point on South Georgia. And then I finished up by taking the ship, the James Clark Rocks, all the way back to the UK.
Wow, what an impressive journey. So you got to experience two stations on the first time going south, as we call it, and a trip all the way back on the James Clark Ross. How long was that journey on the ship?
Oh, I think it was somewhere between a month and 2 months. It sort of all blurred into one.
That is an extremely impressive journey. Okay, what Antarctic season are you on? And please do tell us why you founded the most rural, southerly postal station in the world.
Hey, Nadia. Thanks for having us on the podcast. It's great to chat to you all. So I've done 6 seasons at Rothera as part of the station support team, and I'm going down in January for my 7th season.
Wow, 7th season. So this is going to be your first Christmas at home, you were telling me.
Yeah, it is.
How many years?
My last Christmas in the UK was 2017. So I'm really excited to be able to spend it with family this year. It feels really special.
Amazing. And tell me how you are the founder of the Antarctic Postal Logistics, and what does that mean? How is there a post service in Antarctica?
Well, so writing letters and post is something that I've loved for a long time. I just think it's an amazing way to communicate with people. It's not instantaneous. It gives you time to slow down and actually think about what you're writing to somebody, and also when you're reading their replies and stuff. And when we're down in Antarctica, you often get folk who are going out into the field for weeks at a time, might just be two of them in a tent in the middle of nowhere. And I just kind of think it's a really, really nice way to keep connected when you're down there. We don't have great internet. You can just be on your own in a tent for ages. So yeah, I kind of set it up with that, and just also because I like writing letters to people, and it's kind of escalated over the years. It's just got bigger and bigger. So essentially, like, to get letters out into the field, normally we use Twin Otter planes that are going out to resupply the scientists and the projects that are happening. If you used the ships before, Vivan had a letter attached to a fuel drum which was airdropped into the field by the MOD. So however you can get it there.
I remember that letter. I was there in the field. I remember that letter being airdropped on a fuel drum. You're an absolute legend. And also, I know the impact that it makes to people getting letters when they're so far in the field and they're either just talking to the same person every day or they're just feeling like homesick, but homesick from the station where they're new family is, and then having the letter, you're giving news from station and updates, and you always write, I mean, you don't just write a letter with, like, I don't know, 50 words, you write like a full two A4 page letter in tiny writing. Like, there's just so much effort and thought and beautiful drawings accompanying it, so it's amazing. Is it actually recognized as a formal postal service? Like, did you get it recognized by an official body?
No, it's very unofficial, which is also really nice because it's just I've used foreign aircraft who are transiting through as well to take letters, places and stuff, and everyone's just kind of really super happy to do that. It's nice, but yeah, it's definitely not official.
So as we'll fit in quite nicely with the theme of the podcast, I think this is the effect that multiple seasons in Antarctica can have on you. Jerry, you spent 36 months on Bird Island with only a very short break in between. So that's essentially two winter periods. What was that like to leave such an isolated small hold with four people during a winter?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite intense, especially, you know, when you sum it up like that. I'm sure people can understand that it's quite intense. I've had a proper face-to-face conversation with more than maybe 20 people in 2.5 years. So, in the same way that arriving on station is quite overwhelming, I think leaving it was really overwhelming as well. Obviously, a lot of emotions. I was very sad to leave, even after that amount of time. There were definitely some tears. And then you get on the ship and there's all sorts of other people there. Suddenly having to chat to other people and introduce yourself a bit more there. And then we were distracted from being upset because there was fresh fruit on board, fresh tomatoes. So that suddenly was a big distraction. And then you've got a couple of days sort of decompression, coming to terms with things. We sailed into Stanley. And there, again, overwhelming. The gorse was in full flower. And you know that really sort of sweet, pungent smell of gorse. It was the first natural, nice smelling thing I'd smelt in that entire time. Traffic on the roads, it's moving incredibly slowly, but you just can't work out. So we ended up waiting at the side of the road for a good 30 seconds, a minute, as this Land Rover slowly approached and then went past us. It's quite bizarre.
It is, yeah. Do you remember what it was like to have your first pint? Did you go to a pub in the Falklands?
I remember being in that pub and it being, again, overwhelming. And there was a couple of us who had just left Bird Island and we were very much stood by the door because I need to know where my exits are. I want my back to the wall. You know, there's a little bit Bourne Identity. So we're needing to, I'm not used to this many people and this much noise.
You should have eaten the gorse. You know, it tastes like coconut.
I have heard that. I thought it would have been a little bit too weird to arrive back in the real world and straight away start eating the spikiest plant I could
find. Fair enough. Bob, can you remember what it was like to leave Rotherer?
Yeah, it was really bittersweet, actually, because that whole experience was something that was really special to me. I was very conscious that often with the doctor, the one time you go down is the only time you go down. So I was very conscious that I was leaving a lot of these once in a lifetime experiences, a place that was very dear to me, an environment that was very dear to me, and also some really special people. So I had that kind of slight sadness with that. But also, I think I had been away for a decent amount of time. So there was a big part of me that was actually really looking forward to reconnecting with family and friends, thinking about what my next meal was going to be. When I got home, and also for me personally as well, I'd left my job to work down south, so it was a little bit about figuring out what was going to be next for me in my career going forward.
Do you remember what your first meal was when you went home?
Oh, I do actually. It was rice and curry, traditional Sri Lankan food made by my mum. And honestly, I could have cried in that moment when I had that food. It was so good.
Kay, how do you find it back going back each season? That's a new level of work-life balance. You could spend up to 6 months in Antarctica and then 6 months back at home and then repeat that for years.
Yeah, my experience of coming back from Rother has sort of changed quite a lot over the course of the time I've been going south. So the very first time I went down, you obviously, it's just this, I mean, it's an incredible experience each time you go down, but the first time you go down, it's just unbelievable. And you have a very intense and amazing experience. And you assume that coming back to the UK to what is normal to you is just going to be, it's going to be okay. It's, you know, you look forward to seeing your friends and family again. But actually, I found it quite difficult the first time I came back. And it was all quite overwhelming because you've suddenly got so much choice that you don't have on station. So even like going into a supermarket, you're like, oh, I can actually choose what I want to eat. And the more times I've been down, the easier I find it, because you know yourself better and how to best use that time when you first get back. So like the last couple of years, I've done like a little bit of traveling, which has helped readjust from being on station to being back in the UK.
Yes, it can be quite abrupt if you, for example, just get a plane straight from Punta Arenas the day before you're in Antarctica, get on a plane in Punta Arenas, the next day you're in London. Like within 48 hours, you could be from Antarctica to Europe. It's such a stark contrast. Jerry, what steps do you take to readapt to normal life when you come back? And again, you've gone down, you're a repeated offender. You've gone down multiple times.
I think what Kay says is very sensible, especially the bit about knowing yourself more. I think that's one of the great things about Antarctica, is that it's really good for getting to know yourself. So that was almost like in a little bit of a panic about what do I do next? Antarctica's this all-encompassing thing and I can't bear to live without it. This is certainly, since being station leader, it's very difficult to switch off. And I know it's not the only role there, the doctor certainly, and a lot of places, someone like the generator mechanic can't switch off properly because there's always something in the background. Station leader, you can't switch. You get on the plane and you go south and you can't switch off, so you get back off it. So what I really look forward to, what I really enjoy when I get back now, is just a little bit of anonymity, being able to just be in my own place, not have anyone asking me questions, not having to worry about other people's safety or behaviour and things like this, and just being able to switch off from it all completely.
But then also you miss it. You miss it after, like, you know, that gets boring after a week and then you want to go back.
It's that real dichotomy. And you even get people leaving thinking, okay, that's it, I'm done, I'm not back here. And then within a week, you're panicking about how you're going to get back.
You're just totally lost. Yeah. Bav, what did you do when you left station? I know you've told me a little bit about your master's thesis, but could you explain to the audience what that's about?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that we found after getting back that was really useful was keeping in contact with the old wintering team. And I think because of the COVID restrictions, that probably made us do that even more than we otherwise would have. And some of those conversations really just mirror some of the stuff we've been saying now about how weird it is coming back. And it got me thinking, because there's quite a lot of information out there about what to expect if you go down to somewhere that's quite remote. They call them ICE, so isolated confined environments. And there's like information there about what people experience. And I think Bass is really good at preparing people for going down south. But actually, there's not that much out there about what it's like coming back. And having conversations like this is really interesting. And I'm sure a lot of people that have returned have had these types of conversations and found them really handy. And what my project was looking to do was just find out those experiences from people, put them together so that they can be kind of just disseminated and discussed to help people adjust better when they come back.
And what were the responses like? What did the majority of the participants say as to things that were challenging? And do you think the majority of people did have struggles coming back home?
I think it's an adjustment for everyone. How you adjust varies depending on yourself, what you're coming back to, Have you been down south before? So all of these things kind of impact like how you find it. But despite speaking to people from different bases over different decades, different lengths of deployment, different jobs, despite all of that, everyone might have their own Antarctic story, and yet similar themes came out. Things like crowded places or not feeling like you're quite sure about what next. People often found talking about things to people back home a bit odd because it's so unique. It's really hard for people to really appreciate some of what you've been through and that side of things. So there's lots of different things that came out from talking to people.
And it's really important to conduct that work and to have these discussions. And I think if you're listening to this and you are a returner, it's okay to know that you're not on your own. So if we talk about what's next and how we envisaged our future when we were on station, did you know, Jerry, what you were going to do when you left?
No, I didn't have like long-term plans. I actually had a little bit of short-term work with the RSPB, which I think that worked well for me because almost as soon as I got back, I had a little contract, just something to get me back into the flow of normal working. But then quite quickly, I reapplied for BASS and I got offered that job. So it was almost back to back. I hardly had a break from work. But even now, I do still feel that every season comes around. It's what if I miss my chance? I think it's because it's so far away and so unique. It's not just somewhere I could go on holiday or just pop down and see people. I still have that mild panic that's it, I'm not going to get there again.
That fear of missing out, of really wanting to go back and knowing that the community might fall apart without you. maybe not that extreme. And Bob, how's your medical career shaping up for you right now? Like, what are you doing at the moment?
After coming back, I went back into A&E because it was sort of what I knew and what I did. So I ended up working in a busy emergency department in South London, which was a big change because obviously the environment we talked about down south compared to that kind of chaotic A&E environment is very, very different. And actually, one of the things that I took away from being down south was that I really enjoyed sort of more personal medicine. And actually, after that, I kind of reapplied and have started working in general practice. And that's been a really nice shift for me. That's been something I'm enjoying tremendously since swapping over.
Do you still sometimes reflect on your Antarctic experiences? And I know you said you could only go down as a one-off, but is there a part of you that thinks of a way to get there again somehow?
Well, I think never say never with these sorts of things. You never know what opportunities might come in the future. I definitely remember it with a lot of fondness.
And are you able to bring any of your practices or like concepts and philosophy that you learn in Antarctica into your work with patients at the moment? Does any of that translate?
It's so, so different. And I think when you're there, you get a real boost of confidence by doing your role and doing your role well. And I think you take that with you. The other thing about being south, I think, is that there's a real teamwork and camaraderie that comes with it. And you have to deal with a lot of things that you might not expect. And I think that's, again, a skill set that I've taken forward with me. Because over there, there's a lot of things that are outside your control. And I think being able to deal with that is a really big skill to have and a very useful one when you're in medicine.
So, Kate, what is the annual Quidditch match, please, in Antarctica? How did that come about?
Well, yeah, so a slightly peculiar piece of Antarctic history is that in 2018, you organised the first game of Quidditch ever to be played in Antarctica, which Bov was a part of, if I remember.
Yep.
And, and it sort of just carried on every year. So essentially we run around on the apron, which is where the aeroplanes are normally sort of being prepared and stuff to fly, with a mop handle between our legs and various balls of different colours been sort of thrown and kicked around and things like that. So it's just, a little bit of fun. and a little bit of a break from what can be at times, or a lot of the time, is like a really hard job. It's quite, well, obviously, you all know it's a very full on sort of work environment and stuff. And it's really important when you're down on station to take the time to do other things that aren't work, you know, to take time out and switch off and enjoy each other's company. Yeah, you featured in a few of the games, hey Nadia?
Yes. Being the sneaker, which was really fun, catching the golden snitch. Like, genuinely, we have a golden snitch that is dressed up as a yellow chicken that runs around a pitch. It's like, it's almost like being at school again. Like, we had a sports day event as well, and it's quite hard to organize that in the real world with so many people that are keen, because obviously availability of people and getting together for a city game is really hard.
Rather, as you say, there's you know, a large number of people there in the summer, and it's very much a captive audience. They can't go anywhere. So yeah, if you keep nagging long enough, people will just join in. No, I don't think that's actually true. I think people are very happy to join in and enjoy it.
Well, thanks, Kay. Bav, from your research that you conducted, what are some of the things that helped people to readapt to the other world?
Yeah, I think part of it is knowing what to expect. Us having this conversation and knowing that people do find it a little bit odd when you come back, knowing that's a thing is a big part of it. Other things that people found helpful were maintaining relationships while they're away. I think it's really easy, and I'm very guilty of this, to really jumping into the experience, really immersing yourself into it. And then before you know it, you've actually missed quite a lot of things that have happened while you've been away, which is then a little bit tricky to catch up on. So I think keeping in touch while you're away is a really big one. Next, I think it's okay to miss it. It's okay to miss all the cool things that you were doing down south. It's okay to kind of to reminisce and enjoy those stories. But just be aware that people that haven't experienced it, like family and friends, they might not be as interested in it as you are talking about it. So a lot of people found that actually speaking to their Bass mates or Bass friends about some of those reminiscing type experiences was really nice. I think we've all mentioned crowds to some degree, and that, you know, after being somewhere where you're with a very select group, it's okay that it's going to take a little while for crowds to be completely normal again. The other thing that people found was that planning, so having like a trip set out or some stability in terms of what they're doing next, was really useful. One, because it gave them a bit of something to transition into before going back to quote unquote the other world. And one thing that they found was that actually let them do some of the things they liked in Antarctica, some of the outdoorsy pursuits. And there's other things that they might not have as much access to when they're back at work. So yeah, I think those are the main things. It's basically just about accepting that it's okay that things might be a little bit different for a while, and that it's good to talk to people about it. Those were some of the real kind of take-homes.
Jerry, have you got any words of wisdom that you could impart to anyone about how to readapt to the real world?
I'll just follow up on what these guys have said about, yeah, chatting with people. You go out with friends and you become really self-aware that every single one of my stories or anecdotes has to start with when I was on Bird Island. And, you can end up shutting down after a while, because that's not necessarily what everyone wants to hear. The people who do want to hear are brilliant. So one of the things that I've found actually really helpful is doing a couple of talks, presentations, lectures. So, you know, if you've got a school group or a WI group or something like this, they've invited me there. They've given me 45 minutes to just speak. And it's a really nice way of sort of reliving it. I'm looking back at old pictures and, you can feel that passion coming through and just happy to talk about it nonstop to people who want to hear. So I found that's actually really helped.
Yeah, I think it's a bit like this podcast as well. It's something that I like doing because it just relives these stories and I'm taken back into this completely different mindset of what I felt like when I was on a research station. And you're all like united in this sense of camaraderie, which is what I feel like every time I talk to a collective group of people that have been at British Antarctic Survey. Jerry or Bav, have you got any a signpost to any resources that people coming back from Antarctica could access if they are struggling or have difficulties with just adapting to this new pace and change of life?
For BAS people, once they've returned, even once they're off contract, there are various resources still open to people. The BAS Welfare Services, there's an employee assistance programme, and there is a civil servants charity. So there is that support available if people need it. But sometimes, as Bob has mentioned earlier, the best support is the other people that wintered with you, that know you well.
Yeah, that community you can always refer to.
One thing that I didn't experience because of the time I came back, but came up as a bit of a theme, was that actually a lot of people found when they first got home, there was like a real fun, exciting bit where they're reuniting with people, seeing loads of folk, and kind of celebrating being back. That is quite quickly followed by like a reintegration bit where all of a sudden you're back to, oh, where am I going to work? What about this bill? All the kind of practical things that you don't necessarily have to think about so much when you're on station. It's almost universal that people feel slightly odd to some degree when they get back. And it's okay. It takes time. And it's definitely okay to talk about it.
Absolutely. Amazing. Thank you all so much for your time in speaking to me on this special episode of the Ice World podcast. Good luck for the next 7th annual Quidditch match at Rotherhithe. Okay? And Jerry and Bob, enjoy the other world. There are many roles available in the jobs section of the British Antarctic Survey's website, and the British Antarctic Survey has a range of welfare support available to staff during and after their deployment should they experience any other challenges. And if you enjoy the Ice World podcast, please tell people and write a nice review of your favourite episode. It really does help us spread the word.